want to break into the system.
Someone without access to the exam prison.
I have been doing a little hacking in here, as a matter of fact.
Computers and the programs will start thinking, and the people will stop.
I still don't understand why you want to break into the system.
Because, man, somewhere in one of these memories is the evidence that I got in front of my computer destruction.
Everyone, welcome to the May 2nd edition of the In the Now Show. This is your host, Slip Mode, along with
VR.
Trusty sidekick VR. In the house. Well, how's things? Yeah? That good, huh?
Oh, yeah. I was overwhelmed with enthusiasm. I was ecstatic with joy at that moment.
Great. Me too. Oh, man. Got done working out not too long ago. Always feels good to have a workout, go in the sauna. Okay, well, we've got...
I am just waiting for the greatest, the most made-up, concocted holiday that exists.
Kwanzaa?
No, that's actually got some meaning. But Cinco de Mayo, which means just the 5th of May and nothing important or nothing interesting happened except that...
No, Kwanzaa's
we all like to drink on that day.
Kwanzaa says it's an African holiday. It's a guy that made it here in the United States, okay? You go to Africa and say, hey, do you know about Kwanzaa? And they'll say, dude, what are you talking about, bro?
That means like a donkey's rear end.
Wow. They have that in some websites, I hear. All right, well, let's just get straight to the news. Well, we talked about a while ago that Suse, whoever you talk to, got a big win over there in Munich for about 14,000 computers. Well, Microsoft has hired the guy that made the sale.
Oh, well, if you can't beat him,
buy him.
That's right.
Microsoft has hired one of its worst enemies, the Suse Linux salesperson, whose efforts led the city of Munich to adopt Linux and open source software instead of Microsoft products. Carl Egner, formerly Suse County representative for Munich, is overseeing sales at Microsoft's data center produces to products to mid-sized companies in Germany. He began his role April 1st, Microsoft said. I think Microsoft sees the European public sector as the vanguard of the fight against open source, said Red Monk Analysis. James Governor and hired Agner will give the company insight into its foes' methods. Microsoft is a learning organization, and one of the ways of learning is bringing in different ways of thinking, he had, or buying out as much innovation and talent.
Sounds more, instead of being like a vanguard or like the front lines, it seems that they're taking this vanguard or the front, you know, the spearhead, and perverting it into, you know, the general corruption of the bourgeois.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't the salesman. Maybe it was the product was the reason that it was sold.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, you know, was he just that good, or
maybe
could anybody have sold that product?
My mother sells Linux.
Except that it is pretty good if you get a government to be able to change its, you know, its operating system or whole city.
Yeah.
That's some good salesmanship.
Yeah, I guess obviously with dealing with some of the crap you have to deal with being a, you know, Microsoft typical end user, maybe it wasn't so hard.
That's true.
Let's try something else.
Yeah, it's like, well, this really bites. Let's try something new.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Whoa. Something there in my eye. Okay. Got it out. All right. Now, moving along here. Steve Wozniak, is going to be giving the Saturday keynote speech at the Fifth Hope conference. That's sponsored by 2600, and it's going to be down there in New York from July, I think it's 9th through the 11th. And let's see. We're happy to announce that Steve Wozniak, who helped shape the very nature of today's computers with his Apple Computer Designs, will be the Saturday's keynote speaker at the Fifth Hope this July in New York City. Wozniak has a long history in Silicon Valley and is respected worldwide as a visionary and philanthropist. He currently runs Wheels of Zeus, Woz, and is on the board of directors of Jacent and Danger Incorporated.
Wow. That's kind of like getting, Buddha to talk at a religious convention.
Kevin Mitnick will be doing the Friday keynote speech. It'll be interesting.
Wow, this sounds like a great conference.
Yeah. Yeah, I am definitely going to be there.
All right.
I'm actually going to bring my dad out there down in New York, and I got a cousin who works down there, too. And maybe see some of my New York peeps and everyone else that is going to be attending, that I know from the Internet. All right.
Party
well,
New York style.
Oh, man. It doesn't stop. I wish it was like that here in AZ. Oh, wow. Well, I'm going to have to answer that later. That is a hot chick giving me a call right now. Actually, no, I'm going to answer that in the show. Can you just keep talking for me? Thanks.
Yeah, sure. Okay, we can do this. You know, I was thinking the other day of, you know, what is really this all about? Why can't we do something different? All right, I'm really unprepared for this. We can now. There we go. So, yes, Vera. Oh, I'm so done. Yeah, so we're, I'm at a complete loss, and this is why I'm the sidekick and not actually
sorry,
the
bro.
Host.
That was definitely a needed phone call that I needed to answer.
Yeah,
that.
It better be.
Oh, man. Let me tell you.
I'm hitting it pretty hard here.
Yeah, I don't have a picture on there. I should get a picture. Okay, sorry, folks. Sorry, you can't blame me, right? You can't.
I can't blame. I can, but then I'm not.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. Good way to kill a few minutes. all right. We do have lots of stories, so we're going to fill it up with quality information for sure. Okay. All right. Well, Suse. Gosh, I need to talk to a developer and find out what the right way of saying it, so anybody bashes me, I can say, hey, I know the true form of saying it. Their CTO takes issue with backporting. Suse's chief technology officer says he believes the practice of backporting features from the 2.6 Linux kernel into older versions is a bad thing because it interferes with standardization of the open source operating system. During a keynote address at the Real World Linux Conference here Thursday, which is back late April, mid-April, Jürgen Geck also chided industry players to avoid practices that could further fragment open source standardization efforts.
That sounds like a really detrimental thing.
Well, here, there's a few things. I think it's a mistake. I think it's a big mistake, he said. I think it's a big mistake because of one reason. It's a big mistake. No, he didn't say that. This work is not going to be supported by the open source community because it's not interesting anymore because everyone else is working on 2.6. Now, there's a follow-up article to this, right? So Suse is not happy about that. And the one that they're really talking about is Red Hat backporting stuff from the 2.6 kernel down to the 2.4 kernel. And, 2.4, stable for sure, and bringing some of those features in might, hear this out. The creator of the Linux operating system, Linus Torvalds, has weighed in on the issue of backporting features from newer Linux kernels into older ones, calling the practice a good thing for the most part. I think it makes sense from a company standpoint to basically cherry-pick stuff from the development version that they feel is important to their customers, and in that sense, I think the backporting is actually a very good thing. Let's see. Our kernel maintainer has a clear policy. Who is this? For Debian? I think it's Debian. That only features not in 2.4 will be accepted for the inclusion of additional patches if they are in 2.6. This ensures that the feature is supported and will be present in future kernels.
What really is backporting?
Backporting. It's like taking code and porting it to another area. Porting. moving.
Yeah, okay. I was thinking, like, you know, because there's ports that it could, it somehow, like, plug in old open ports.
Yeah, it's like taking the code and, like, porting it back to the older system.
Okay.
It's like taking upgrades and taking portions of the new system and bringing it back to the old one. Because, you know, the old one's really good and stable.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, let me just take that and just add it back here because I really need that and I'm happy with what I got.
That's true. Well, that sounds like a great option.
Said backporting certain features to the version of 2.4 of the Linux kernel can also allow for the easier migration to the 2.6 version. So if people don't want to go balls out and go get 2.6, which is, I mean, it runs pretty good, you know, they can do some backportage to 2.4. So I guess Red Hat's doing that, and I don't know. Maybe it's because Red Hat already tweaks the heck out of the 2.4 kernel to begin with. Not the heck. Like, you know, they tweak it a little bit. And maybe they're just comfortable with that, and they're not ready to jump all their developers to 2.6. So they're going to be doing that for a while, backporting some features, and then jumping to the 2.6 kernel.
Well, it makes it probably a nicer transition as well. That you're already kind of familiar with some of the new functionalities of 2.6 before you do a full transfer.
I guess I'm one of those bleeding edge folks. But, you know, bleeding edge in Linux, when you get it, you know, that's considered stable. You know, the newest stable is usually pretty stable. I would say about 85% stable, you know, unless you're pushing some special features. But for typical stuff that people normally do, I think it's pretty stable.
Well, that sounds better than Windows.
Yeah.
Which seems like stable for 15% of the time.
Yeah. Well, it depends on what you do. You know, if you install a printer, you might be screwed. You know, you might lose all your data. So it just depends. I know I'm doing a little bit of knocking here, but hey, sometimes it's right. You know, there's just some... You gotta rebuild the Windows machines every year and a half, you know? Just start them from scratch, you know? And I know that's partly because there's a lot of crap that, like, you know, viruses and you know, Internet Exploiter helps get installed and adware and tracking and all this junk that's just built to screw you, the user. You know, it depends on your surfing habits, but, you know, it's usually pretty good to, like, build a system every year and a half and just kind of clean it out and go again. Excuse me. All right. Actually, here, I'll read this here. This is from Bionome. Thank you, Bionome, for contributing here on the forums. He has an article here that basically talks about Microsoft's patches to buggy Windows SSL problems. Microsoft confirmed that disruptive bugs in a recently issued Windows security patch could cause systems to freeze or lead to system usage overload. The buggy patch issued earlier this month to plug numerous critical vulnerabilities in the Windows operating system has caused problems for IT admins because of conflicts with installed drivers. Sorry about that. It causes Microsoft Windows 2000 to try repeatedly to load the drivers that do not load successfully. In those cases, the patch causes computers to stop responding or at startup or locks users out of the Windows log on feature. Well, that's not very good at all. Let's see, they have a temporary workaround. Eventually, they're going to have a complete workaround, I'm pretty sure here. Yeah, there's quite a bit of vulnerabilities out there from Microsoft.
Well, yeah, if you can't log on, how are you going to get the patch?
Well, yeah, that's pretty bad as well.
Yeah, that's kind of a little frightening.
Let's see. Bugs of Tangerine. An attacker who successfully exploited the most severe of these vulnerabilities, which are the newest 14 vulnerabilities that come to Microsoft's patch the third Tuesday of every month is when they come out with patches. Most of these vulnerabilities, you can take complete control of the affected system, including installing programs, viewing, changing, or deleting data, or creating new accounts that have full privileges. Security researchers have also detected an SSL bomb exploit code circulating underground that could potentially lead to worm and virus attacks. Yay! So everyone get really excited. Bionome also.
Yeah, I'm wanting to download that patch already.
Yeah. That patch will help you out. But just talking about those exploits, and that's a buggy patch. So you don't want to get that one. But obviously they get.
Yeah, I'm just gonna wait for a little while.
Let's see. Bionim also said, how about port knocking? We talked about that on a previous show, and I do believe I talked about the software that they've came out with. It's PortNockD, I think it is, or something like that. And basically, somebody did write up some code that actually allows you to have a port knocking server and a client. What port knocking is kind of like you have ports in your computer that people can connect to from the outside world. And what it does is it just kind of sends a packet to a series of numbers. You know, you pick its, you know, ports are, you know, 1 through, 65535, and you send a packet to, let's just say I send a packet to 12 and 200, and then I send another one to 533, and then I send another one to 14. Well, this port knock D will recognize that, and then it will execute a function for you, which may be to open up an SSH port or anything on your system. It's very interesting. They have a client and a daemon software. So thank you, Bionome, for that. Always you can send information to the show at www.slipnet.org. Go to the forums and post away in the In and Now section for each show. And we'll definitely read anyone's comments, stories, or anything out there. We definitely love the support. And I did get an email from someone, so they actually loved the show, said it was great, and said he'd let me know if he felt like I was slacking. So, hey, I appreciate it, and if I am slacking, please let me know, because this show is as much as a show for you as it is for us.
And let me tell you just from personal experience that switches are the only way you get him to change.
Switches?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
A switch, a very small stick that stings when you're struck by it.
Oh, wow.
So break out that whip.
Yeah, baby. Always, yeah, you can email me at slipmode with, I spell it two different ways, but spell it the normal way, no leet speak, S-L-I-P-M-O-D-E at quest, Q-W-E-S-T .net. Sign me up for gay porn. No, don't do that. But send us some information if you'd like, or just post on the forums, or send me a private note on the forums. Okay, moving back to the stories. Okay, I read this. Everyone's going to like this. You're going to like this, VR.
Right on.
Passwords revealed by Sweet Deal. More than 70% of the people would reveal their computer password in exchange for a bar of chocolate, a survey has found. It also showed that 34% of respondents volunteered their password when asked without even needing to be bribed.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm not going to give it out. Chocolate? Okay.
What's your password? Don't know. I've got a Snickers bar.
Snickers right there.
Okay.
A second survey found that 79% of people unwittingly gave away information that could be used to steal their identity when questioned. Security firms predict that the lax security practices will fuel a British boom in online identity theft. The survey on passwords was carried out on the out for the Info Security Europe trade show, due to take place at the Olympia in London from 27th to 29th of April. The survey data was gathered by questioning commuters passing through the Liverpool Street station in London and found that many were happy to share login and password information with those carrying out the research.
Oh, my God. Were they wearing, like, you know, I would really like to see if they're, like, wearing lab coats or if they were just looking like everybody else. If they had a clipboard or what? They're like, hi.
Let me get your password. I don't know.
Conducting a survey. What's your computer password? Yeah. Where do you work and where do you live?
Sir, you can get a they probably had a candy bar booth. And they said, like, how much? He said, well, if you just give me a password, you can just have it. Oh, shoot. Here's my password. You know?
But at the same time, for that kind of thing, I would tell you a fake password. Be like, how can you confirm that?
Well, you can't.
Right. So I'm going, it might be actually like 80% of the population of Britain is really smart. And they're like, what's your password?
Stickleberry. Give me that candy bar, man.
You're like, F you. And okay, that's your password. Here's your Snickers bar.
Yeah. As well as people simply telling the questionnaires their passwords or saying that they would hand them over in exchange for some confectionery, a further 34% revealed the word or the phrase that they used when asked if it had anything to do with their pet or child's name. Family names, pets, and football teams were all used by those questioned to provide inspiration for a password. The survey found that an average people have to remember 4 passwords, though an unlucky respondent had to remember 40. Many adopt very unsafe tactics.
40 passwords.
40 passwords.
Imagine if he, like, you know, loses track.
They're tattooed on his wrist.
They're like, oh, it's not that one. Let me try number 2.
Yeah. Let me do my variation of this. It's Green Bay Packers kick butt. No. Okay. It's kick ass. No. It's kick it. No. Okay. Actually, I don't watch much sports. So. Okay. All right. The survey found that average people. Okay. Many adopt very unsafe tactics to remember these login names. Some of these questions simply use the same password for every system they must log on to. Those that use several passwords often wrote them down and hid them in a desk or any document on their computer. Almost all of those questioned, 80%, said that they were fed up with passwords and would like a better way to log on to work computer systems.
iScan device. That's what I'm all about. Stick the little old eyeball into a little socket.
Big brother, dude.
Yep.
Fear it. Stolen goods. Okay. A separate survey carried out for RSA Security found a further evidence of the lax password and security habits of Britons found that many people volunteered information, personal information, such as their mother's maiden name and their own date of birth when questioned during a street survey. Such information is coveted by identity thieves, as these facts are often used by sites and security checks. RSA survey found that maintaining online identities is becoming a burden for many people who, on average, use 20 sites that require them to register and log on afterwards. I know that that's kind of annoying, but hey, I'm still going to do my best to keep it secure. To make these different online personas easy to manage, 2/3 use the same password for all the different sites. Of those questions, 33% said that they shared passwords or wrote them down to make it easier to remember which one to use on which website. We are amazed at the level of ignorance from the consumers and the need to protect their online identity. This can only increase if people do not become more aware of their responsibility to protect their virtual identities. This increasing meaning the identity theft. So,
because from all the, you know, because from all the stuff I hear and see about it, it must be really prolific about how many people would get their identity stolen.
In Arizona, we're one of the largest states for identity theft.
Oh, yeah. Enjoy.
That's because we got so many monkeys coming in and out of here, dropping their credit cards and not knowing how to drive and don't know what the hell they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah.
They're like, yeah, we can trust everybody. Well, that's probably what it is. It's the heat that cooks their head.
Yeah.
Makes them a little wacky.
Like,
I'm having heat stroke. I'm going to go drive around the block.
Okay, let's see here. Dun, 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 dun. All right, this is kind of neat. This is something that hackers have been doing for a very long time. And sounds like this could be pretty fun as well. The DOD considers creation of a national software security lab. Department of Defense... cybersecurity managers urge Secretary Donald Rumsfeld to establish a high-assurance software... That's another article. This is... that is another article. All right, what I said. This is different. This is for checking software for vulnerabilities. Urging Secretary Donald Rumsfeld to establish a high-assurance software lab serving all the DOD. The lab would be virtual, drawing on the existing software certification capabilities scattered across DOD's research facilities. Joe Zarzenbeck, Deputy Director for the Software Assurance and DOD's Information Assurance Decorative, said the measure... Man, that's, he must have a lot of stuff on his business card.
Yeah, it's just words.
Yeah. So the measure is one response to language in the fiscal 2004 defense authorization bill that requires the department to make sure vulnerabilities in commercial software don't compromise military missions. Lawmakers are asking how the DOD can embrace the acquisition risk management to improve software integrity. DOD is not up to the task of projecting missions from the software vulnerabilities. Jazarmbek said at the annual Systems and Software Technology Conference, the proposed lab would create a single executive organization responsible for software integrity and information assurance. Whatever approach DOD components take on testing software, Zarzenbeck said the efforts should not be overly focused on software development in 4 countries, as they said, as a soon-to-be-released General Accounting Office study suggests. Zarzenbeck said DOD possesses so many millions of lines of code and countless thousands of packages That would take years of effort and millions of dollars to justify or to identify what was developed where.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a start, you know. And a lot of that stuff is there's lots of communities out there that aren't from the DOD that you can rely on that have the same goals in mind for secure software. Now, their own custom code, who knows? You know, they'd have to take care of that themselves. But if it's like open source software and stuff like that, they could, you know, build a hardened system and then track vulnerabilities for a hardened system and do their best on their own to fix those, spot them ahead of time, and all that other stuff. Then, hey, it's like it's having a you know, security team. You kind of want that. All right. Well, more people getting busted for swapping music. Damn swappers.
I know. Well, I think they're all just, you know, that Rio is just a...
Nobody gets mad when you swap porn. You don't see any porn stars going, hey, I'm not getting my money.
Oh, no, because they really enjoy their work.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not doing it for the money.
Hey, check me
That's
out.
That's just a bonus.
See, isn't that right? Then shouldn't the people that are doing what they're doing enjoy their work?
Yeah.
They're getting paid. Porn stars aren't mad that you're swapping my porn, man. Don't care.
Don't care.
Don't care.
But the music industry, they care.
Last time I looked at MTV Cribs, man, they were all in the ghetto. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Jeez, I don't know how they make it, you know? How do they even afford instruments for their with what they're doing?
Well, they sell plasma.
Yeah, they sell
they got
plasma.
It. Yeah. Oh, so really all music star celebrities probably just have a really rare form of blood.
You know, the only person I saw that did live in the ghetto on MTV Cribs was Redman. He was straight in the ghetto, dude.
He probably likes it.
He had, like, two TVs with, like, a rack of VHS videos that were all porn, and he had, like, three people passed out on the floor.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, dude. And, like, everything, his kitchen was filled with trash. It was great. But yeah, other than Redman, people must be trading his files like crazy. But yeah.
Yeah, because he's not making any money.
Yeah, he's in the ghetto. So yeah. But yeah, the recording industry sued 477 more computer users. You dirty bastards, you. Wednesday, which was back on April 28th, including dozens of college students at schools in 11 states. One of them was Arizona, actually. They even went to Deer Valley High School. Accusing them of illegally sharing music across the internet. The Recording Industry Associates of America, the trading group for the largest labels, praised efforts for colleges and universities to use technology and school policies to crack down on music piracy on their own computer networks. But it said that the most egregious offenders on campus deserve to be sued. There's also a complimentary need for enforcement by copyright owners against the serious offenders to remind people that this activity is illegal. So the group's president, Kerry Sherman, the recording industry filed its latest complaints against John Doe defendants, identifying them only by their numeric internet protocol addresses. I can just blame everything on my roommate. It said lawyers, and then he could just blame everything on me, and then, I don't know. Lawyers.
Then you could blame it on the burglar who broke in and shared, like, 10 gigs of music in a night.
Yeah, well, some hacker took over my computer and was sharing.
Well, you know, that's completely utterly possible.
Yeah. Said its lawyers will work through the courts to request subpoenas against the universities and some commercial internet providers to learn defendants' names. I'll just change my IP address. Sometimes it's DHCP. Like, how the hell do you know who it is, man? You just release that stuff, find a new one. Unless somebody's got a lot of logs. Campus officials at Mansfield University in Pennsylvania warned students months ago about requests of recording industries to crack down on copyright infringement to its computer networks. I can see those guys saying, screw it, man. I'm just going to keep sharing, bro.
Well, I foresee that if these people get sued, then and they lose, then they're going to sue the universities for the computer that allowed them to do it.
Yep. It threatened to unplug the internet connection for each of the students identified by the recording industry and illegal sharing of music until the student remove all the software used to distribute songs online. Sure, I'll just move that to my empty hard drive over here. Not everyone agrees that downloading and file sharing is copyright infringement, wrote the school's technical director, Connell L. Beckman. While this may be debatable, Mansfield said the university is required to comply with the law. So, I don't know. I do think there are some people out there that do a lot of swapping. I mean, they spend 6 hours a day on swapping. To me, I think that's a little wrong.
Well, what's really wrong about it is that's 6 hours a day that they could have been doing something else and being more productive
and not bogging down
society.
The networks of the school.
Right. And that, you know, that they're not producing anything that helps to contribute, you know, which to the general production and betterment of society.
Yeah.
So truly, they're not really stealing music. They're stealing that time and the energy of what they were doing.
Well, they were stealing
what they could do. But that's not really the important part.
Yeah. I would... Yeah, because, like I said...
That's a secondary issue. That's, like, what you're doing, like...
Yeah, there's some people, dude. It's like underwear file swapping. Those guys are in their underwear all day long, swapping files. Okay. All right.
You know, it's kind of interesting. So I was talking, you know, I was having a conversation about wife swapping or swinging.
Wife swapping?
Wife swapping.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, what's now called swinging.
Oh.
So it's kind of interesting that we've gone from, you know, swapping wives to swapping files.
A lot of people swap a lot of things, dude.
It's kind of funny.
You just wanted to talk about swapping wives. We know about it.
Yeah,
All right.
I'm just a swinger at heart.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man. Post about that in the forums, and we'd like to hear your comments.
Yeah, send pictures of what you want to swap.
Oh, come on. I do. No. No. No.
I had to get that in there. Sorry, Bob's not here today.
Wow. Very loud beep. Yeah, but, okay. We're operating on low battery for the audio.
Oh, okay, that's what that was.
That's all right.
It had to use more power to inform you that it had low power.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
That's okay, I've got backup batteries, but you know what? We're just gonna go cold turkey. We're just gonna do it.
Oh, without the music safety net there.
Unless if you want.
Well, I can.
Yeah, go ahead.
I could restring it.
Go take a look for there. I know it's in there for sure. Okay, anyways, back to the news. Secret repairs preceding TCP flaw release. Only the math had changed, but the emergence of a workable exploit for an old TCP security hole prompted a security initiative to fix the internet, giving network operators a week to secure vulnerable routers. The Cladstein repair effort livened an already intense period for security pros, already juggling a bevy of Windows security patches. The TCP issue published yesterday, which was back in late August, mid-late August, was publicly known as early as 1998, sorry. It allows an attacker to reset an existing TCP session using specially crafted TCP packets. Most TCP sessions are short-lived, so the vulnerability has little impact, but certain critical protocols, such as the Border Gateway Protocol, depending on live long-lived sessions, the weakness which affects widely used Cisco and Juniper routers, can be addressed by using MD5 authentication to secure BGP sessions, a step most ISPs have never taken because an exploit seemed mathematically implausible. Paul Watson came up with a more efficient way of exploiting the vulnerability, making the attack much faster, particularly the attackers controlling bot networks of compromised machines. The clock began ticking March 14th when Watson announced plans to present a paper on specific security problems in the TCP protocols at the CANSEC West Conference in April 21st. Any luck over there? They're in there for sure.
No, sir.
No luck. All right. That's all right. I'll keep going.
There we go.
There we go.
I struck gold.
I bought like a huge pack.
Oh, my God. What is that? Icky.
I bought a huge pack. All right. I don't want to stray too far from this story. But anyways, yeah, it's been around for a while. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you can destroy TCP sessions. And if you want to take a look at it, the NISCC Vulnerability Advisory Number for this is 2369. There's already code out there to be able to do it, and you can grab that off the internet. It's basically something that resets the connections out there, and pretty much the TCP protocol cannot defend against it. There is some ways to deal with the problem, but it seems like people are kind of trying to put a patch together, and I don't know if they've put that out quite yet. Okay. Here we go.
Yeah, that's pretty funny that, I can't even work a CD player.
It's all right,
All right, but I can search out batteries like no one else.
We won't.
My God, what do you have in that drawer?
We won't tell what you saw what's in that drawer.
I think I'm going to be permanently scarred and traumatized.
Oh, gosh. But, yeah. So
the cardinal nature of that drawer is amazing. Now I understand why you have batteries there, because it goes with everything else.
Oh, no, it does not. That's the other drawer. Okay. Yeah. So, that was that last story. Okay. All right. Just a little thought in the back of my head. Okay, this is actually the War Games that I was speaking of earlier. Basically, West Point, New York, the mission to secure an entire computer network for the United States and its allies against a vague enemy force. Hostile agents aim to wreak havoc on military plans, sabotaging databases, criminal terminals, and communications. Criminal terminals, computer terminals. But the cyber warriors planning a best defense aren't analysis hunkering down at the Pentagon. They are cadets of the West Point competing against military cadets and other schools in a four-day cyber defense exercise this week. And the enemy isn't Al-Qaeda or Iraqi insurance. The team is led by none other than the National Security Agency. Cyber warfare is a subset of classical information war that goes back as far as ancient Chinese military against Sun Tzu. Has pushed its way into U.S. military curricula as the Internet has become pervasive. Anything hooked up to the Internet is vulnerable, said Emmanuel Elei, 22, a senior Army cadet from Chino, California, who is taking part in the war game. It's not really scared. I'm looking forward to the best exploits that the NSA can throw at us, said Elei, who, after graduating in May, is shipping out to officer training school, then off to a position in the U.S. Armored Unit in South Korea.
Well, you know, the problem that I see with that is that they're only going to be able to attack as well as they can defend.
Well, isn't that how it always is?
Yeah, which is kind of sad because, you know, that they are probably quite a bit behind to what is out there already.
I don't think so. I don't believe so.
Oh, okay.
These guys are pretty good, but I heard that they lose when they go to the Hacker War Games at DEF CON.
Oh, I can believe that.
Here are the rules of the game.
Well, first off, that's why they lose.
Yeah.
They play by rules.
The NSA team, known as the Red Cell, sounds like a video game, launches attacks on selected networks at the Air Force, Army, Coast Guard, Merchant Marine, and Navy academies. From an operations center somewhere in Maryland, the computer scenario plays out virtually inside the cadets' computers. Going on the offensive or using so-called hack-backed techniques is against competitive rules. Also out of bounds are forms of sabotage in which computers can be turned into zombies and used to attack opponent machines with millions of data messages shutting down communication, which basically is denial of service. This exercise is solely concerned with defending networks, not attacking them. Okay, that denial of service is an attack, said Major Ron Dodge, coach of the Army 32-member team and a professor at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point.
But at the same time, if you create a denial of service to your own machine that you're trying to defend, no one can attack it. You're defending by attacking yourself.
Yeah, but it's actually simpler just to take the cord and plug it instead of running a zombie to send packets.
Yeah, but see, that's innovative. That's witful thought.
No, I don't think that's what they're doing.
No,
they're saying using that against other computers. And they're saying out of the bounds are forms of sabotage. You can't do that to the other computers.
Yeah,
you can't do a denial of service. Which, actually, I thought for a moment that was what they're saying you could do. No, yeah, they're saying you can't do denial of service in the attack.
Yeah, because that would be a great defense.
Well, it'd be terrible. It's not a good defense at all. You want your services up all the time.
But if you're defending against their specific attack, They can't attack you if they can't reach you.
But if you don't have uptime, then what's the point of even having the service in the first place, which is an attack?
Which is the same as unplugging your thing from the...
Which is an attack, because what you want is uptime. You don't want to be down. Security consultant Michael Erbschlow, wow, that's an interesting name, of Alexandria Virgin says the focus of vulnerability detection is the basis of effective cyber defense. He estimates 99% of the attacks exploit a few dozen known network weaknesses. If you keep out 99% of those attacks, it's easier to guard against the 1% that make up the real threats to networks. Who is the author of Information Warfare, How to Survive Cyber Attacks. The rules this year are designed to make the competition simulate more of a 24-hour operation, despite the reality that taps still sound at 22:30, which basically 11:30 p.m., and cadets are required to be in bed with lights out by then. Overnight, the enemy can prey upon any network vulnerabilities with impunity.
So really they have...
Sounds like they're using out-of-the-can exploits.
Yeah. And then they have to, like, get it all, build up their defense and then go to bed.
And then wait for the attack.
Yeah.
And see what happens. That sounds pretty interesting. That's pretty cool. Okay.
Or they have to hack in the dark.
Glow sticks, man.
Yeah, those military glow sticks rock.
Yeah.
They last quite a bit longer and brighter.
In movies, they last for hours.
That's right.
All right. Yeah, war games are definitely cool. Okay. Well, there's a tool out there that fights pop-up ad blockers.
Right on.
So now they can...
block your pop-up blocker.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Then you block the pop-up blocker.
That's real cyber warfare right there.
Darren, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
That's block up chess, right? Pop up chess. Like your move against defend against the attack, and then they attack against your defense, which overwhelms your defense. It's beautiful.
It's a great thing, and it works on Microsoft. In the ongoing battle over pop up advertising, marketers are gaining a new weapon to fight back against the increasing use of pop-up ad blockers. Those people that don't want to see your ads. Man, those guys really make me mad.
You will see my ad and like it.
Yeah. Falk, eSolutions AG, a German-based vendor of online ad delivery systems, plans to offer publishers and marketers a way to thwart software that blocks pop-ups and pop-under ads by automatically converting them into other forms of online ads once such software is detected. The pop-up blocker detection will be an option in the company's ad solution FX Rich Media ad management tool. Wow, big name. Which is slated to be announced Wednesday. That's back in, April 28th. Said Joe Apprendi, CEO of the company's Falk North American subsidiary. Thank you, Joe. With the option turned on, Ad Solution FX will automatically replace the pop-up or pop-under ad with what are called floating ads, and those are the most annoying, or ads that appear as transparent images over website content. So while you're reading your crap, this freaking transparent piece of crap is right in your way.
Ooh, so it's also, like, subliminal.
It makes me mad. He said, marketers also will be able to create and select their own types of replacement ads if they choose. Those bastards. Man. Seriously. I've seen those ads, and they're on the screen, and they make, like, they're there for a certain period of time. You can't close them. And they're covering, like, your story or whatever you want to read. And then sometimes they have, like, a place to close them out, and you click it.
And it pops up another
one. And it opens up those bastards. Oh, my gosh. Oh, man. It's just tough out there, you know? Absolutely tough out there. It's like buying a car, you know? They try to screw you into buying something that automatically comes with the car, but it's something special and extra, but it already came with the car. But for some reason, they want another amount of money for it.
I think that's a little different there, but that's okay.
I know, but it's tricky advertisement,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's just being shisty.
All right, well, I want to talk about something that rocks.
I like the word shisty.
Shisty. It's fun. You see that right there?
Yes, I do. That looks like a Pac-Man video.
Looks like a Pac-Man game, right?
Yeah.
Okay, this is awesome. This right here, I don't know if it's really fun for Pac-Man to do this in this game, but it's still pretty cool to watch. Okay, basically, if you go to pacmanhattan.com, like Manhattan the city, or the island, actually, Pac-Manhattan is a large-scale urban game that utilizes the New York City grid to recreate the 1980s video game sensation of Pac-Man. This analog version of Pac-Man is being developed in NYU's Interface Telecommunications Graduate Program in order to explore what happens when games are removed from their little world of tabletops, televisions, and computers and are placed in a larger real world of street corners and cities. A player dressed as Pac-Man will run around the Washington Square Park area of Manhattan while attempting to collect all the virtual dots. Basically, they have all these intersections marked off, and somebody will be watching as you go from these various points, and you'll be getting those dots that run the length of the streets. Four players dressed up as Ghosts Inky, Blinky, Pinky, and Clyde will attempt to catch Pac-Man before all the dots are collected. Using global positioning, Wi-Fi, internet connections, cell phones, and custom software designed by the Pac-Manhattan team, Pac-Man and the Ghosts will be tracked from a central location, and their progress will be broadcast over the internet for viewers around the world.
It sounds like they're like a couple of people dressed up in ghost costumes to mug Pac-Man.
To mug Pac-Man. Well, yeah. They just have to touch him, I think.
Okay.
You got a mind on you, man. You want him to mug Pac-Man, bro?
Well, that's what it kind of sounds like, that it's just like, you know, a facade that is justifying the, you know, the beating of an innocent person that's just trying to eat some wafers.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man. Well, no, I don't think it has anything to do with that. But basically, it sounds pretty fun, and it's good exercise. And I think the funnest is watching it on your computer. I don't think Pac-Man is, like, enjoying walking all these streets.
Yeah.
But, hey, what happens when you see... What I was thinking of was, what happens when you see Inky, Binky, and Pinky, and Clyde? You know, do you run, you know, and they just try to catch up to you, or what? Like, how does that
work? Well, they're probably just walking at the same speed.
Yeah, and you see that guy, and you're like, whoa, go the other way.
I need to duck into a store over here.
See, I wonder how you do that. I think you have to stay in the open and just keep walking back.
I think you're just watching him, you know, the guy who's doing his master's, or actually do it. You're not doing it.
Well, I know we're not doing it.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be nice if we could control them.
Yeah, that you could be like, you know what, you need to go over there.
And then probably the guy would probably get really mad if he died, because he's like, I saw that guy, I couldn't turn around, you know. I'm sure you have...
You made my master's thesis go to hell.
Yeah, I'm sure they have plenty of reaction time to be able to do that. But, yeah, very interesting stuff.
That's
PacManhattan.com.
Cool. You know, imagine, you know, if that gets a little bit... like now with cell phones that... You know, have, like, the positioning system in them and all that. You could play your own real video game.
Well, I don't think the positioning system can be used by us.
No, but it can be, eventually.
Well,
several more generations could have GPS already programmed into them.
Yeah, you know. Be like, where's my kid?
No, I was thinking more like, where am I?
Oh, well.
I wonder about that quite often.
I can see that.
And who are you? And what am I doing here?
Wow.
What do I have?
It's a scary world if things are like that. Who are you? How are you? Turn on your phone. Let me send you a message. All right, that's you. Wow, you do that for a living, huh? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, got about a few minutes ago, and don't know if you have anything that you'd like to share yourself.
Yeah. No, I think I'm pretty burnt. I've been on fire for quite some time. I think I'm just a big pile of smoldering ash.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Just clean up after you're done.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I've already burned up my arm, so I can't do that anymore.
Oh, man. All right. Well, yeah, like I said, post to the forums. Send us an email. It's actually easier just send the forums, or send me a private message on the forum. I don't think I have anything else to say. I think I'll just end it on that, and... put lots of music in there.
You want to go play some paintball?
When?
Soon.
Yeah, I'd love to play paintball.
All right.
I'd love to shoot you.
All you'd be seeing is the barrel of my weapon.
Of your weapon, okay. Yeah, paintball and go-karting.
All right, yeah, we'll have to do that. Plan it.
All right.
I'll pencil it in.
Okay, well, that was the...
Or you could pen it in with invisible ink, and that would be really fun.
Wow. Wow. Could do that.
Yeah.
Or you could just port knock on my server and let me know.
Okay.
And then it'll send me a message.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll hide a message somewhere on your system.
Sweet. But give me candy so I can tell you what it is later, what my response is.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. We'll work that out.
All right. Well, that was the May 2nd edition of the In the Now show. This is your host, Slip Mode, signing out.
And this is VR saying, remember to clean your weapon regularly.
All right.
Whatever that may be, that is completely up to you.
Okay. The VRS has speaketh. All right, we'll see everyone in 2 weeks. See you then.
Later.
Yourself. is lifelike. All this media is so sick like. Woke up today and it's nothing like, there's nothing lifelike. All I wanna do is lose myself, lose my mind again. All I wanna do is lose myself, lose my mind again. All I wanna do is lose myself, lose my mind again. All I wanna do is lose myself, lose my mind again. All I wanna do is lose myself, lose my mind again.
Lose my mind again, 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 lose my mind again.